Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sarah Malka Winter, and today we study Melachim Beis, Perek Tes Zayin, Chapter 16. And then we go from the wonderful high that is Yosam to the terrible disappointment that is Achaz. He is going to, in many ways, erase all the progress that his father made. One of Yosam's undertakings was that he strengthened the bridge connecting the house of the king to the Beis HaMikdash. And this was not just a practical step. This connection between the house of the king and the mandate of the king and the house of Hashem and the mission of being the nation of Hashem was so real and alive in him. But his son Achaz will sever all the ties. One of the stories we tell ourselves is that we are defined, limited, and a victim of our circumstances. We don't really have control. We don't really have free will. One of the lessons we take with us in learning these chapters is the truth that circumstances, socioeconomic status, opportunities, while these have tremendous impacts on our lives and our experiences, they do not ultimately determine the people we become. We always retain the ability to make choices. In the next few chapters, we will study four generations of Yehuda kings in a row: Yosam, Achaz, and then Chizkiyahu, and then Menashe. And they each make vastly different choices. In the 17th year of Pekach ben Remaliahu, Achaz, the son of Yosam, becomes king. He was 20 years old when he became king, and he ruled for 16 years, as we find out in verses 1 and 2. In verse 3, Vayelech b'derech malchei Yisrael, he went in the ways of the kings of Yisrael. V'gamas b'no ha'avir ba'esh, and he also passed his son through fire. Ketoavos hagayim, like the disgusting ways of the other nations, asher horisha Hashem osam mipnei b'nei Yisrael, that Hashem had banished from before b'nei Yisrael. The Gemara talks about this verse as human sacrifice, and he says that he literally put his son in the fire. He killed his son for his pagan god. And it was only the life-saving action once more of a woman, this time his wife, that his other son, Chizkiyahu, actually survived. And he served so many idols. Verse 5 tells us the challenges he had. Az Ya'ale Ritzin Melech Aram Upekach Ben Remaliahu Melech Yisrael Yerushalayim LaMilchama VaYatzuru Al Achaz VeLo Yachlu LiHilachem. And then Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach Ben Remaliahu, the king of Yisrael, went up against Jerusalem to fight, and they sieged on Achaz, but they were not able to wage war. Again, just the headlines here in Melachim. But in Divrei Hayamim, we are told that these two kings actually did a tremendous amount of damage to Yehuda, fighting, killing hundreds of thousands, and actually taking many of them as captives, until a Navi of Hashem spoke to the warriors of Malchus Yisrael and told them, "Don't you realize why you have been successful at conquering Yehuda? Hashem is punishing them, and you dare take them as slaves? They are your brothers. If you don't return them, you will face the wrath of Hashem." And to their credit, they did. They clothed them, they fed them, restored them, and returned them. So it was Hashem who had punished Yehuda so drastically, and now through a Navi saved them. Maybe a wake-up call? A call to return home? But as it tells us clearly in Divrei Hayamim, Achaz ignores all calls. And so rather than turn to Hashem, Achaz now, in our verse 7, reaches out for help to the rising empire of Assyria, Ashur. Vayishlach Achaz malachim al Tiglas Pileser melech Ashur lemar, Avdecha uvincha ani, alei vahoshieni mikaf melech Aram, umikaf melech Yisrael hakomim alai. Achaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, saying, "I am your servant, I am your son. Please, rise and save me from the hands of the king of Aram and from the hands of the king of Yisrael who are rising up against me." And in verse 8, Achaz takes silver and gold from the Beis HaMikdash and he sends them to the king of Ashur as bribery. The king of Ashur is very happy to continue his conquest, went to Damascus, conquered it, exiled its people to Kir, and killed the king of Aram. And in verse 10, Achaz travels to Aram to meet the king of Ashur, Tiglath-Pileser, and there he sees the altar of Damascus. The Malbim tells us that in Divrei HaYamim we read that he had already started to worship the Avodah Zarah, the pagan gods of Damascus. So seeing the actual altar got him excited, and he wanted it too. He sent the blueprint of this altar to his Kohen Uriah and told him to build it. And in verse 11, Uriah did just that. He built it exactly as the plans, and he had it ready by the time Ahaz returned. In verses 12 and 13, Ahaz was thrilled with it and began to perform all kinds of sacrifices on it. The Chida, in his commentary, Chumash Anach, tells us that these details censure this Uriah, a Kohen going along with this plan so wholeheartedly and efficiently. He couldn't say one word to Ahaz to try to dissuade him. He couldn't maybe do a slower or less perfect job. And in verse 14, Ahaz places this Arami altar into the Beis HaMikdash. Many commentaries understand verse 14 that he placed his altar next to the Mizbeach of Shlomo, but closer to the Heichal, in between the Mizbeach and the Kodesh. Let's just understand this for a moment. Here in our chapter, a Jewish king, a Yehuda king, has placed an altar for idol worship inside the Beis HaMikdash. And this began a series of shocking changes and actions. In verse 15, he commands Uriah the Kohen, saying, "On my larger altar, that's where you should start burning the morning burnt offerings and the evening meal offerings, and the king's burnt offerings and his meal offerings, and the burnt offerings of all the people of the land, and their meal offerings and their libations, and the blood of every burnt offering, and the blood of every offering you should sprinkle on it. The copper altar will be for me to visit." And in verse 17, he removed the frames of the basins and removed the basins. Shlomo had built a beautiful basin that rested on 12 copper oxen. Ahaz now had it taken apart and placed on the floor. In Malachim Aleph, chapter 7, we may recall this beautiful basin in all its architectural splendor, with its meticulous, exquisite beauty, and also its deep and holy symbolism. And Ahaz, in his brazen and scornful way, tramples on all that is beautiful and sacred. Something that had been lovingly imagined and constructed by his own forefather. And then in verse 18, it talks about the canopy for Shabbos that they had built in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a sort of covered rest area for the Kohanim who had finished their shift on Shabbos. He removed it. And in Divrei HaYamim, we find out that he locked the doors of the Beis HaMikdash, not letting anyone come in to serve. And in verse 19, we finally close the era of Ahaz. And in verse 20, Vayishkav Ahaz Mavosav, Vayikaver Mavosav, Be'er David, Vayimloch, Chizkiyahu Beno Tachtav. Ahaz died and was buried with his fathers in Ir David, and his son Chizkiyahu ruled in his stead. But in Divrei HaYamim, we learn that he was not actually buried with the kings. After all the awful damage he had done, no one thought he deserved to actually be buried with the righteous men who came before him. And finally, the 16 years are over. How much damage, how much loss can occur in 16 years? But help is on the way in the form of Ahaz's son, Chizkiyahu. Remember, the Gemara told us that Chizkiyahu was almost brought as a human sacrifice. He almost didn't even live through his childhood. But he did. And once again, we will see the power of choice. As much damage that Ahaz caused in his day, that's how much Chizkiyahu will repair and restore. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmot Imahotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Aleha HaShalom, and Sarah Schenker Aleha HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.